Books at Bedtime by Calming Anxiety. Beyond the Bayou by Kate Chopin. The bayou curved like a crescent around the point of land on which La Folle's cabin stood. Between the stream and the hut lay a big abandoned field where cattle were pastured when the bayou supplied them with water enough. Through the woods that spread back into the unknown regions, the woman had drawn an imaginary line, and past this circle she never stepped. This was the form of her only mania. She was now a large, gaunt black woman, past 35. Her real name was Jacqueline, but everyone on the plantation called her La Folle, because in childhood she had been frightened literally out of her senses, and had never wholly regained them. It was when there had been skirmishing and sharpshooting all day in the woods. Evening was near when Petite Madère, black with powder and crimson with blood, had staggered into the captain of Jacqueline's mother, his pursuers close at his heels. The sight had stunned her childish reason. She dwelt alone in her solitary cabin, for the rest of the quarters had long since been removed beyond her sight and knowledge. She had more physical strength than most men, and made her patch of cotton and corn and tobacco like the rest of them. But of the world beyond the bayou, she had long known nothing, save what her morbid fancy conceived. People at Bellissime had grown used to her and her way, and they thought nothing of it. Even when old Miss died, they did not wonder that La Folle had not crossed the bayou, but had stood upon her side of it, wailing and lamenting. Petite Maître was now the owner of Bellissime. He was a middle-aged man with a family of beautiful daughters about him, and a little son whom La Folle loved as if it had been her own. She called him Chéri, and so did everyone else because she did. None of the girls had ever been to her what Chéri was. They had each and all loved to be with her and to listen to her wondrous stories of things that always happened yonder beyond the bayou. But none of them had stroked her blacked hand quite as Chéri did, nor rested their heads against her knees so confidingly, nor fallen asleep in her arms as he used to do. For Chéri hardly did such things now, since he had become the proud possessor of a gun and had had his black curls cut off. That summer, the summer Chéri gave La Folle two black curls tied with a knot of red ribbon, the water ran so low in the bayou that even the little children at Bellissime were able to cross it on foot, and the cattle were sent to pasture down by the river. La Folle was sorry when they were gone, and she loved these dumb companions well, and liked to feel that they were there, and to hear them browsing by night up to her own enclosure. It was Saturday afternoon when the fields were deserted. The men had flocked to a neighbouring village to do their week's trading, and the women, they were occupied with household affairs, La Folle as well as the others. It was then that she mended and washed her handful of clothes, scoured her house, and did her baking. In this last employment, she never forgot Chéri. Today, she had fashioned croquignoles of the most fantastic and alluring shapes for him. So when she saw the boy come trudging across the old field with his gleaming little new rifle on his shoulder, she called out gaily to him, "Chéri, Chéri." But Chéri did not heed the summons, for he was coming straight to her, his pockets all bulged out with diamonds and raisins and an orange that he had secured for her from a very fine dinner which he had been given that day up at his father's house. He was a sunny-faced youngster of 10. When he emptied the pockets, La Follette patted him down round the red cheeks, wiped his soiled hands on her apron, and smoothed his hair. Then she watched him as, with his cakes in his hand, he crossed her strip of cotton back of the cabin and disappeared into the wood. He had boasted of the things he was going to do with his gun out there. "You think they got plenty deer in the wood, La Follette?" he had inquired, with a calculating air of an experienced hunter. "Non, non," the woman laughed. "Don't you look for no deer, Cherie. That's too big. But you bring La Follette one good fat squirrel for her dinner tomorrow, and she gonna be as satisfied. One squirrel ain't a bite. I'll bring you Mo and one, La Follette," he had boasted pompously as he went away. When the woman, an hour later, heard the report of the boy's rifle close to the wood's edge, she would have thought nothing of it if a sharp cry of distress had not followed the sound. She withdrew her arms from the tump of suds as if they had been plunged, dried them upon the apron, and as quickly as her trembling limbs would bear her, hurried to the spot whence the ominous rapport had come. It was as she had feared. There she found Cherie stretched upon the ground with his rifle beside him. He moaned piteously. "I'm dead, La Follette. I'm dead. I'm gone." "Non, non," she exclaimed resolutely as she knelt beside him. "Put your arm round La Follette's neck, Cherie. That's nothing. That going, that be nothing." She lifted him into her powerful arms. Cherie had carried his gun muzzle downwards. He had stumbled. He did not know how. He only knew that he had a ball lodged somewhere in his leg, and he thought that his end was at hand. Now, with his head upon the woman's shoulder, he moaned and wept with pain and fright. "Oh, La Follette, La Follette, it hurts so bad. I can't stand it, La Follette." "Don't cry, mon babe. Mon babe, mon cherie," the woman spoke soothingly as she covered the ground with long strides. "La Follette goin', mind you. Dr. Bonfils goin'. Come, make mon cherie well again." She had reached the abandoned field. As she crossed it with her precious burden, she looked constantly and restlessly from side to side. A terrible fear was upon her, the fear of the world beyond the bayou, the morbid and insane dread she had been under since childhood. When she was at the bayou's edge, she stood there and shouted for help as if her life depended upon it. "Oh, petite maître, venez donc." No voice responded. Cherie's hot tears were scalding her neck. She called for each and every one upon the place, and still, no one came. She shouted, she waited, but whether her voice remained unheard or unheeded, no reply came to her frenzied cries. And all the while, Cherie moaned and wept and entreated to be taken home to his mother. La Follette gave a last despairing look around her. Extreme terror was upon her. She clasped the child close against her breast, where he could feel her heartbeat like a muffled hammer. Then, shutting her eyes, she ran suddenly down the shallow bank of the bayou and never stopped till she had climbed the opposite shore. She stood there, quivering an instant, as she opened her eyes. Then she plunged into the footpath through the trees. She spoke no more to Cherie, but muttered constantly, "Bon Dieu, bon Dieu." Instinct seemed to guide her. When the path spread clear and smooth enough before her, She again closed her eyes tightly against the sight of that unknown and terrifying world. A child, playing in some weeds, caught sight of her as she neared the quarters. The little one uttered a cry of dismay. "La folle," she screamed in her piercing treble. "La folle done crossed de bayou." Quickly, the cry passed down the line of cabins. "Yonder, la folle done crossed de bayou." Children, old men, old women, young ones with infants in their arms flocked to the doors and windows to see this awe-inspiring spectacle. Most of them shuddered with superstitious dread of what it might portend. "She totin sherry," some of them shouted. Some of the more daring gathered about her and followed at her heels, only to fall back with new terror when she turned her distorted face upon them. Her eyes were bloodshot, and the saliva had gathered in a white foam in her black lips. Someone had run ahead of her to where Petit Maître sat with his family and guests upon the gallery. "Petit Maître, la folle done crossed a bayou. Look her yonder, toting sherry." This startling intimation was the first which they had had of the woman's approach. She was now near at hand. She walked with long strides. Her eyes were fixed desperately before her, and she breathed heavily as a tired ox. At the foot of the stairway, where she could not have mounted, she laid the boy in his father's arms. Then the word that had looked red to La Folle suddenly turned black, like that day that she had seen powder and blood. She reeled for an instant. Before a sustaining arm could reach her, she fell heavily to the ground. When La Folle regained consciousness, she was at home again, in her own cabin and upon her own bed. The moon rays, streaming in through the open door and windows, gave that light was needed to the old black mammy, who stood at the table concocting a tisane of fragrant herbs. It was very late. Others who had come and found that the stupor clung to her had gone again. Petit Maître had been there, and with him Dr. Bonfils, who had said that La Folle might die. But death had passed her by. The voice was very clear and steady, with which she spoke to Tante Lisette, brewing her tisane there in the corner. "If you will give you me one good drink, tisane, Tante Lisette, I believe I'm going to be sleeping with me." As she did sleep, so soundly, so healthfully, that old Lisette without compunction stole softly away, to creep back through the moonlit fields to her own cabin in the new quarters. The first touch of the cool grey morning awoke La Folle. She arose calmly, as if no tempest had shaken and threatened her existence but yesterday. She donned her new blue cottonade and white apron, for she remembered that this was Sunday. When she had made for herself a cup of strong black coffee and drunk it with relish, she quitted the cabin and walked across the old familiar field to the bayou's edge again. She did not stop there, as she had always done before, but crossed with a long, steady stride, as if she had done this all her life. When she had made her way through the brush and scrub, the cottonwood trees that lined the opposite bank, she found herself upon the border of a field where the white bursting cotton with the dew upon it gleamed for acres and acres like frosted silver in the early dawn. La Folle drew a long, deep breath as she gazed across the country. She walked slowly and uncertainly, like one who hardly knows how, looking about her as she went. The cabins that yesterday had sent a clamour of voices to pursue her were quiet now. No one was yet astir at Belasim. Only the birds that darted here and there from hedges were awake and singing their matins. When La Folle came to the broad stretch of velvety lawn that surrounded the house, she moved slowly and with delight over the springy turf that was delicious beneath her tread. She stopped to find whence came those perfumes that were assailing her senses with the memories from a time far gone. They were there, stealing up to her from a thousand blue violets that peeped out from green, luxuriant beds. There they were, showering down from the big waxen bells of the magnolias far above her head and from the jessamine clumps around her. There were roses, too, without number. To right and left, palms spread in broad and graceful curves. It all looked like enchantment beneath the sparkling sheen of dew. When La Folle had slowly and cautiously mounted the many steps that led up to the veranda, she turned to look back at the perilous ascent she had made. Then she caught sight of the river, bending like a silver bow at the foot of the Belasim. Exultation possessed her soul. La Folle rapped softly upon a door near at hand. Cherie's mother soon cautiously opened it. Quickly and cleverly, she dissembled the astonishment she felt at seeing La Folle. "Ah, La Folle, it is you, so early." "Oui, madame. I come ax how my poor little Cherie do some morning." "He is feeling easier, thank you, La Folle. Dr. Bonfil say it will be nothing serious. He's sleeping now. Will you come back when he awakes?" "No, madame. I am going. Wait here till Cherie wake up." La Folle seated herself upon the topmost step of the veranda. A look of wonder and deep content crept into her face as she watched for the first time the sun rise upon the new, the beautiful world beyond the bayou.